Hello, friends. Now we continue with our work in A Treatise on White Magic. We're on commentary number 49 in the Rules for Magic on the Astral Plane. Really, I suppose we're closer to commentary 99 for the whole of the book. But in any case, we're working in Rule 10, and this is the 33rd program in Rule 10, and our work has to do with how to train and advise young and upcoming promising aspirants. So not to narrow them down, you know, not to lay emphasis, it says, on diet, celibacy, time, seasons, and so distract their attention from the newer and sacred art of being and the wonder of living as a soul. So this takes us forward on this September 11th day. Forget not that when a man is living as a soul, and his entire personality is therefore subordinated to that soul, then unselfish purpose, purity of life, conformity to law, and setting of a true example of spiritual living will normally and automatically follow. So realize first things and those which will in due course follow, and place emphasis on first things. Food, for instance, is frequently a matter of climatic expediency and taste, and that food is desirable which keeps the physical body in condition to serve the race. That's the first thing. You know, if you are an Inuit person and you're living up where the normal kinds of foods will not grow and only the whale or the seal is available, then that's what you have to work with. Again, a divine son of God can surely function as freely and as effectively when in the married state as in the celibate. He will, however, brook no prostitution of the powers of the body to the grosser satisfactions, nor would he offend against established custom, nor lower the standards which the world has set as the highest and the best. So an enforced celibacy is not desirable in the newer type of training. The issues have been confused, and the emphasis has been too often laid upon the physical acts and not upon the life of the actor when the attention is fixed upon the soul. The physical plain life will be rightly handled. Let's see, not upon the life of the actor. Again, a little problem, I think. Something left out. Let us see. Life of the actor. Not upon the life of the actor. When attention is fixed upon the soul. There should be, I think, an and in there, possibly. I'll put one in. And when the attention is fixed upon the soul, the physical plane life will be rightly handled. First things first, and you know the old saying, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things will be added to you. It will be realized that there is greater hindrance to the growth of man in spiritual being through a critical attitude or a state of self-satisfaction than by the eating of meat. I remember Alice Bailey, she was talking about, she herself at a certain time had her diet reassigned, by the Tibetans, so she could probably stay in incarnation and finish that work. And I think that involved some eating of meat, you know, and better to be to eat beefsteak with a kind tongue than be a hypercritical vegetarian. Something of that nature emerged. You know, people are often proud of the diet that they have forced upon themselves and criticize others for not having the same. Now, two rules of life must be taught the young aspirant. Okay. So the first rule, let me bring that out. And he must be taught to focus on constructive activity and to refrain from pulling down the old order of living. He must be set to work building the future and to thinking along the new line. So the power of substitution is needed, and not the power of criticism, which so often energizes the very undesirable factor which is criticized. He must be warned not to waste time in attacking that which is undesirable, but must instead bend all his energies to creating the new temple of the Lord through which the glory is manifested. This is so difficult to do in an era where abuses are so evident to so many. In this way, public attention will gradually be focused upon the new and beautiful, and the old established creations, especially when undesirable and not worth bridging from, will fall into decay for lack of attention and so disappear. So, you know, what do we have? Basically, the needed emphasis upon the good, the beautiful, and the true. Okay. And maybe this is the next one, perhaps. Second rule of life, perhaps. You must be taught also, yes, it must be, that partisanship is in no way a sign of spiritual development. Of course, you know, holism, the emphasis of the whole and not the part, the welfare of the whole, the greatest good of the greatest number and of the whole. These are the desirable outcomes towards which we strive, not just the good of the part. He will not, therefore, use the words anti-this or pro-that. Such words automatically breed hatred and attack and effort to resist change. They put the user on the defensive. Every class of human beings is a group of brothers. Catholics, Jews, Gentiles, Occidentals, and Orientals are all the sons of God. So, holism and not partisanship. You know, I'm thinking back in the days of the Second World War and, you know, Hitler and the Nazis were rampant, and the Japanese Empire was overrunning the South East Asia and China, and it was serious. And in general, you know, what the Tibetan says here must hold. The Tibetan had to refer at times, though, to Hitler and his evil gang, and he analyzed the Axis powers as those of Maya, glamour, and illusion, which were Japan, Germany, and Italy, respectively. So sometimes he had to blatantly call it as it was. But in general, when dealing with human beings behind whom the Black Lodge has not settled, and behind whom there is no impulsion from that body of wickedness, then the critical attitude is not warranted when we're dealing simply with the sons of men. I guess we have to think about whether that lodge, what does it say, cruel hate, wicked lust, something, those are words used, lords of, high initiates in their own way, whether that lodge with its six leaders in the east and six leaders in the west is again on the attack. Sometimes it seems that this is very much the case, and that very strong medicine will be required to ward off this fighting to the last ditch to obstruct the rightful coming in of the Aquarian Age and the unimpeded return of the spiritual hierarchy of the planet and the reappearance of the Christ. Let us see. Let us see. These next 7 years before 2025 hold much potential for disturbance of the human race and of the planet, and also much potential for identifying the real problems so that people see more clearly and can formulate their opinions in line with the good and not with that which is simply preferred by the personality. As regards the future of this world group of which we have been speaking, much depends upon two things. Okay, so future. Why does it always disappear? Okay. Future of the new group of world servers, the world group which DK is here discussing first. Okay. And, you know, in all of this, let's just measure ourselves and see that we measure up and take the steps necessary to measure up. First, it is necessary for all those isolated disciples working in every country in the world to become aware of one another and then to enter into telepathic rapport. Well, okay, this was 90 years ago, but this is now increasingly possible with our amazing systems of communication. I mean, you know, I'm working, and so are so many others, in real time, conversing with people all over the world, thinking together, planning together. Remember the days when if you wanted to contact, let's say, from the United States, New Zealand, you sent a letter off and maybe a week later or more, that letter would arrive and then a response would come and so forth. Now we have instantaneous communication and something that comes close to the annihilation of time. Well, this telepathic rapport, okay, so that is a condition of the mind and soul. They're all different kinds of telepathy. And some of this is obviated by the ability to simply talk to each other over time and space. This may seem to you to be a wonderful but in practical vision, I assure you that this is not so. The work of establishing this rapport may indeed be slow, but it is an inevitable effect of the growing sensitivity of all souls who are working in the field of the world. The individual, the Tibetan has told us, is naturally telepathic, and it's just a question of recognizing this and ridding ourselves of the conditions which inhibit the naturally inherent telepathy. The first indication of it is that instinctive recognition of those who constitute part of this group when they meet and contact each other in the way of world intercourse. So recognition of co-workers in the new group of world servers is an indication of developing telepathy. There comes to them an immediate flashing forth of the light, an instantaneous electrical interplay, a sudden sensing of a similarity of vision and of objective, or a vital opportunity to aid in and to cooperate with each other's in the work, in which it is realized that all are interested. So there are confirmations of membership, and I'm thinking of the Dalai Lama and Bishop Tutu. There they are pursuing apparently very different agendas in different religions, but they are fast friends and they recognize each other as men of God, whatever they may call it, and people with similar objectives to raise the human race, regardless of the concretions, the secondary concretions of the systems in which they work. That's, I think, you know, a good example of the recognition, sort of instantly recognized friendships between those who seem to be working in very different fields, but they share something in common, the commitment first to the service of the race. Working disciples everywhere, when they meet each other, will know at once that their work is identical and will advise each other as to where cooperation and supplementary endeavor may be possible. So, disciplic recognition. Okay. The CFPLIC. Okay. In about 30 years, so what would we say, maybe 1960s and the 60s here, the interrelation between the units in this group, scattered as they may be all over the world, will be so close that daily they will meet each other at a set time and in a secret place. Okay. Well, we have to see whether did this prophecy work out as anticipated. Certainly there has been wide recognition of cooperation across the globe, and in the work of triangles, there is this internal meeting going on all the time, but it need not be at a set time. But certainly the full moon work, as supported by our communication system, has us all meeting at a set time. And in the secret place of the soul, yes. So that is true. Okay. This only becomes possible when the triplicity of soul, mind, brain, you know, leaving for the moment the asobody out of it because it's so often out of alignment, are all aligned in the individual, and when each aspect of it can be simultaneously in touch with members of the group. Okay, so you know there is a deep intergroup. Whoa, that's not going to work, is it? Yeah, a deep intergroup communication. At present, all the souls of the group of mystics do work in unison. Maybe we don't know that, you know, if we're a member of this group. A number have succeeded in bringing the soul and the mind also into a close and established relation, but as yet have the lowest aspect of this aligned and linking triangle, the physical brain, as yet the lowest aspect, remains totally unresponsive to the waves of force emanating from the higher aspects of the disciples, engaged thus in laying the foundation of the new civilization. So, how it stands now, not completed, and the soul, mind, brain alignment needs still much work. Okay. But it's coming. And I guess, well, here we are, you know, let's say 90 years later. Let's say that some of this work was written in the late 20s after Cosmic Fire. So 90 years later, how are we doing? And have we held a sufficient point of tension, or have we relied upon the amazing telecommunication system to put us immediately on rapport without developing the fullness of the necessary telepathy? But think about it, you know, soul, mind, brain. Can you Does your mind speak what the soul impresses? And with that soul-illumined thought, does it reach into your ordinary sensory world, understanding right here on the densest level of the physical plane? Is that happening for you, for me, for whom? Are we, you know, coming through as developing white magicians, able to bring the idea of the soul right into incarnation here on the physical plane, whether verbally, artistically, in some way, manifesting it? Or does our brain, resist, and are we Are those cells, the brain cells, sleepy and not as responsive as they should be? There's so many things to work on when we consider what is offered here. So it is therefore largely a matter of perfecting the mechanism of the brain so that it can rightly register and correctly transmit the soul impressions and the group purposes. Okay, well, we're going to have that interesting situation where it tells me, oh, you can't do this, you know. But maybe I did. Let's just see. Sorry to take a little, just a moment off here, because you never know whether your save has been a save. But looks like it, looks like it. So the conditioning the brain, and I suppose, we might say, right, right just jumps all over the place, doesn't it? There's got to be ways, right? Physical conditioning. I'm sure that diet exercise, meditative practice are all involved, and other things too. So this involves, let's see. Now, so let's just say this, and we might say i.e. getting the physical brain into the state of right responsiveness involves what? Okay. The awakening into conscious activity of the center between the eyebrows, called by the Oriental student the Asana Center. So, let's just say brain awakening requires Asana Center awakening. And that is a, that can be done through meditation. It's a Venus center largely. It's a fifth ray center. The solar angel is, in a way, a Venus being, or highly connected with that particular planet. So our meditations will help with this process. I'm recalling that the Tibetan even gave some disciples exercises for awakening the Asana Center, and I suppose stimulating the brain to the point where it could really be that receptive template for the impression from the soul. The subordinating then of this center to that of the head center, so that the two vibrate in unison, and Venus is subordinated to Vulcan, which at this point and mostly rules the head center. Okay. And thus, and this will produce three things, the establishment of three things. So this is all about awakening the responsiveness of the physical brain for the sake of right impression from the union of soul and mind. So what will it produce? Direct conscious alignment between soul, mind, brain. The appearance of a magnetic field, which embraces both the head centers and so definitely affects the pineal gland and the pituitary gland. And we might say later will come the inclusion of the alta major center, ALT, alta major center. Let's see. ALMC. Let's see if that does it. It's nice to know. Yeah, it did. ALMC. Later will come the inclusion of the alta major center. And then a triangle is formed with its what's called dispelling radiance. Okay, then the recognition of this field of dual activity in two ways, as a light in the head, an interior radiant sun, or as a dynamic center of energy through which the will or purpose aspect of the soul can make itself felt. I guess it depends on the ray, how this manifests depends on the ray and the quality of the brain cells. But anyway, three things. Okay, and there's the word mostly with one L. All right. So, what are we looking at here? Perfecting the mechanism and getting the brain into right shape. Awaken the Asana Center. Subordinate the Asana Center to the head center. And this is going to produce that alignment that's necessary, the awakening of the pineal gland and the pituitary and their relationship, particularly producing a kind of inner head radiance, which may or may not be visible. As DK says, sometimes, you know, there's a very definite contact, but the visibility is not there. Nevertheless, the two work together, the two centers, the two glands, and an inner, either light or power is what we seem to experience, or maybe both. Either light or power, or maybe both are experienced. Okay, and number three, and this will proceed, the development of a facility which will enable the man to do what? So when the brain is brought into right functioning, into a necessarily, rightly, correctly awakened state, what can we expect as the result? Okay, now we see. Use the mind in any direction that he chooses, turning it externally towards the world of phenomena or internally towards the world of spiritual being. A flexible and seamlessly operating mental capacity. Next, produce consciously and at will a corresponding responsiveness in the physical brain so that it can register accurately any information which comes from the physical world and the emotional or astral world too. So, you know, a responsive brain will take in subtler worlds. A responsive brain will register impression from the subtler worlds and finally discriminate intelligently between all these spheres of activity. So this is the outcome of being able to unite these two centers and activate the physical brain rightly. So this, let's see here. Just got to get this correct. This is the desirable outcome. Using the mind in any direction, that's number one. Okay, inner or outer. Sometimes the mind is very extroverted and just turned toward outer things, but then that, if that cannot be corrected, it just means the person may be intelligent but still living in the hall of ignorance with regard to the higher of the pairs of opposites. Produce consciously and at will a corresponding responsiveness in the physical brain. So brain registration greatly increases. And finally, discrimination is there. So one knows what's really happening inside. All of this is part of awakening the centers and subordinating higher centers, lower centers to higher centers, and awakening both the mind and the brain in a new way, making them both responsive to the soul. See, let's put this here. Both mind and brain must become responsive to the soul. And probably, okay, BRBL, probably first the mind and then the brain, indicating or allowing us to register the responsiveness of the mind to the soul. We can be very rich interiorly and not know it in the physical brain. And we wouldn't want such a condition to continue. The key to understanding all of these processes which must be developed is that we do indeed have a mechanism for the development, the rightful development of the necessary methods. And this mechanism, this instrument, it has to be trained. It has to be purified. It has to be trained. We have to be attentive in a rather meticulous manner to the training of our instrument of access to the subtler worlds. You know, we've been under the spell for a long time of a kind of ignorance that has shut out life and the higher access to the higher and still more beautiful worlds approaching divine archetypes. We've been shut out. And for many reasons, you know, our own choices, but also choices that humanity has made, undesirable choices. It's been said that, you know, early man was given perfect laws, but he ignored them. The psychology of the rebel came in, and the beings on our planet, due to the perhaps divinely rebellious nature of our planetary logos, have also this psychology of the rebel. And when you rebel against the imposition of dogmatism and imprisoning thoughts, that's okay. You have to do that. But when you rebel against the good law, there's a price to pay. And I think we have paid that price over the millennia in ignorance and being cut off. So, okay, we have to do better. Now, let's see what is further said. This will all be eventually covered by a new psychological approach, which will emerge out of the old, you know, that fourth ray bridging continuity. So the good values of the old are preserved as we search for still better values, and no dangerous break is allowed to occur. So it will emerge out of the old and be a blend of the mechanical schools, I suppose relating to the physical mechanism, the introspective, and the more purely oriental position, plus the conclusion of the two new schools, which will shortly arise, but which as yet are too small to warrant the name. Well, what are those? I mean, you know, maybe the self-actualization psychology that came in the 50s and 60s of the last century. And, you know, maybe the esoteric psychological school, which we are trying to promote by using the books and offered understanding of Master D.K. So the new psychological approaches which take in the soul as a reality, they are in the embryo stage. One school will deal with the energy aspects of the individual and his responsiveness to the energy of the universe in which he is immersed. And the other will consider man as a unit of electricity. So, in fact, the self-actualization school is not there, even though that sort of fourth force dealt with a transpersonal self. But both of these appear to be occult schools or occult approaches to psychology. So let's see. One school will deal with energy aspects of the individual, you know, ray aspects, astrological aspects, and his responsiveness to the energy of the universe, that is the of the planets and system and constellations and so forth, in which he is immersed. And so we've been given that. And the other will consider man as a unit of electricity. Now, you know, this seems to be a method of approaching esoteric psychology by means of the fifth ray. And we do remember, don't we? We just studied it, that the highest method of teaching on the fifth ray is through esoteric psychology. And you know, you kind of wonder whether the discovery is destined or slated to occur in France with its fifth ray soul. The discovery, scientific discovery of the soul, will not be in line with this other method, considering man as a unit of electricity. Both will be quite one-sided, but the contributions of the various schools will someday be unified into one synthetic presentation. That's it. You know, again, partisanship in the academic fields, not advisable, but probably inevitable until the insufficiencies of any method, however good it may be, are actually noted and the need to join with other approaches is realized. Okay. Now let's see. Requirements. Was all of this the first requirement? Maybe I divided it too soon. Okay. Well, we awakened the centers, all right, and we awakened the brain, okay. And there will be a new approach to psychology. We will understand, you know, the whole question of knowing ourselves is for most of us in a woefully retarded condition. We may think we know, but we don't know our past. We don't know our future. We don't know the higher levels of our equipment, the superconscious, and yeah, we've forgotten the thousands of episodes in our past that have made us what we are. But let's just call it the second requirement, assuming that all the foregoing gave us the first requirement. I know I put the word first up there somewhere. It's easy to get a little bit lost, at least I do, I'm sorry. But if I was moving more slowly, maybe I wouldn't. Well, there's the first. Okay. But I'm not quite sure that that's really the second follows on that particular first. Anyway, I'm not going to bother myself with it. Just review it, you know, for yourselves, and I will too. The second requirement, which will establish, right, is the establishing of a relation between working disciples. This is the main objective. The main objective under discussion is the establishing of a right relations or of relations and then right relations between working disciples so that they can strengthen each other's work. The second requirement, okay. DK sometimes seems to have quite a complex mind, and I wonder whether I can follow it all or whether I'm just rushing too much. But let's just say we can pick this up, which will establish relation between the working disciples and the group, is the capacity to preserve a constant and sequential recollection of both the inner and outer life. I guess this is called, continuity of consciousness. Okay, so this is what we want to establish, and it involves certain type of awareness, certain types of techniques, even falling asleep consciously, which he instructs us. I think in Dhyana 2 he instructs us how to do this. And by this we mean, okay, so the very first, I just, excuse me, I just want to, somehow we just have to connect with each other. That's one thing, okay? And that's the very first requirement. Aware of one another and enter into telepathic rapport. That's a really important one. And he gives us ways to do that, and it involves awakening soul, mind, brain, and especially the brain, because to have a soul-infused mind seems something that can be developed, but then the brain can remain resistant. So the new psychology will help develop the soul-mind-brain relation. The new psychology will help us develop soul, mind, brain relation, and then we will really end with all these developments. We will come en rapport with the other members of the group, the new group of world servers, and will recognize each other. Okay, that's the key. And every time I write EN, since this is not written in French, it's supposed to mean energy, but otherwise it doesn't make allowance for a French word. All right, the second requirement is to produce this continuity of consciousness. The power to be fully aware of all happenings in all spheres and departments of man's being during the entire 24 hours of the day. Now, I think we're far from that. We have to be, when we're focused in the sensory world, maybe so much that's going on in the astral or mental or even higher worlds is lost to us. So not an easy development, but then again, so much of our rapport with other members of the group is not sensory, not immediate. It's coming in from subtle planes. So we need to have this continuity to find out what's really impacting us at any time. And the brain again, will be often resistant to this kind of reception. Continuity of consciousness. I'm just, it's one of those terms that follows us constantly in the teaching. And we have to know how he defines it, the power to be fully aware of all happenings in all spheres, as, every vehicle probably is a sphere or an ovoid and is within a plane, which is a sphere. And departments of man's being during the entire 24 hours of the day. What a tall order, I think. And yet this is far from being the case. Indeed, I'll agree there. There is no real awareness of existence during the hours of sleep. The dream life, as related, is as full of illusion as any of the more definitely lower psychic experiences. Sometimes we think that dreams hold the truth, but we have to remember the derivation of the word dream from some old root. Is it an Atlantean root, which means to harm, as well as perhaps to reveal? So we're in that world that has much glamour and illusion. the slowly growing interest in dreams from the standpoint of psychology and the investigation of their probable source are the first weak attempts towards establishing the awareness on a really scientific basis. Maybe Carl Jung made a lot of progress in that way, but it's still just the beginning. This is the revival, he tells us elsewhere, of the Atlantean science of dreams. There is as yet no conscious registering of mental activity during such times. I'm recalling, you know, that I've tried to do that, you know, sometimes to think on, let's say, waking up on the other side trying to think, but if you think too hard, it all just disappears, you know, so there's got to be methods of doing this. There is as yet no conscious registering of mental activity during such times, though ideas can come and you can, the story of the shoemaker and the elves, you know, you lay out your materials and then the Devic elves get to work and give you a result in the morning, as when the emotional body, holds the center of the stage. With what is the mind occupied during a long period of emotional upset? It has, we know, its own life and laws. But we're far from, we are still far from re-establishing the science of dreaming, and probably, necessarily, on a higher turn of the spiral. Again, see, he's proving to us that, you know, we really don't have continuity of consciousness. Again, what are the activities of the soul when the development of consciousness will have reached the stage where there will be a sentient reaction in all departments of man's nature, meaning we will feel the vibrations occurring in all departments of man's nature, and all of it recorded by the brain. So what will that be like when everything that's going on will be recorded by the brain, and what activities are the souls evidencing at such times? Already men are aware of both the physical plane activity and emotional aliveness simultaneously. I think for some of us, you know, if we're too emotional and too physically focused, we don't think. That's maybe the advantage of having a Ray 2 astral body, that you can think and feel at the same time, think with accuracy and feel at the same time without having your mind sort of shut out by emotional or physical reaction. That is for the majority a common or an ordinary condition where two activities can be registered at once. Why not three or even four? So he's making a case for the logical for the development. Making a case for the development of content of consciousness, CNOC, CTOC, CTNOC, none of it. Okay, so let's see if I do that, CNOC, and we'll call it continuity of consciousness. All right. He's making a case for the development of CNOC and saying it is simply logical that it should and will develop. So such is the future ahead of the race, and the disciples actively employed, you know, set to work in service, we might say, will be the first to express and demonstrate this extended consciousness. Establishing the, okay, on a higher turn of the spiral. Okay, so continuity of consciousness, an important and imminent development, but not maybe very imminent. It's coming. So this development of CNOC is coming and will be part of the gifts of the new age. As will that, electrical appreciation of the soul. After all, Aquarius, with its major ruler, Uranus, even as a veiled hierarchical ruler, is the planet of electricity. So, where electricity is involved, we find Uranus, and we will have the appropriate developments. So we remember telepathic interplay. This kind of development started the whole thing, this whole discussion. Thus, telepathic interplay and extended sentiency must be developed and are closely interlinked with each other. So these are two necessary developments for advancement, right? So let's just say two very necessary developments for the advancement of disciples. Of disciples and of humanity eventually. Future developments, the wonder of the new age, all of this coming and offering us powers and abilities and methods of understanding which we hardly deem possible at this time. We're a long way from really understanding it. So interrelating the units through telepathic interplay and making the mechanism so sensitive that we have continuity of consciousness and thereby can witness and participate more in the kind of interplay between disciples. Okay, so first, relationship growing between the disciples in the new group of world servers, and this is done also through refining and developing the mechanism so that it can receive on all levels and probably project from all levels as well. You can really see that in a way the masters have come none too soon. We're not yet capable of doing these things. Here is a master giving us a prognosis, an anticipation of the future. He can do these things. And he's taking the time away from maybe his other great interests to make it possible for us to do these things too, and thereby add to our service potential. We are reaching the 1 hour point here. Oh, it's such a problem saving this big book. But I'm just hoping it works. So let's see. This is one hour, the 1 hour mark. Yes, I'm speeding ahead, friends, and I hope it's not compromising the quality of what I'm trying to offer, which is largely quite a number of correlations and links between aspects of the teaching. You know, what's written is one level of the teaching, and when one begins to work with the teaching and relate different items of information and different kinds of perspectives with one another, still another level of the teaching can appear. And that's the goal here, you know. Give us all something to really ponder and interrelate within our field, mental field and the field of consciousness, many items of information which might remain unrelated, but are in fact very relatable. So it's kind of a, you know, kind of a Mercurian fourth ray process operating here. Now going on, I have therefore pointed out the immediate future of the individual disciple and what lies ahead in the immediate future for the group. So the disciple has much to develop for the sake of telepathy. And communication, I'll call it communication through sensitization. And what lies ahead for the group? What is the, you know, it's always inspiring to be able to think about what are the potentials and have the assurance that somehow, some way, they will be achieved. Okay, what lies ahead for the group? And, you know, we might say, and for this important group called the new group of world servers. Now it is so. It is so called. Maybe he settled upon that term. He used quite a few preliminary terms before that, but maybe, you know, it became named in this way, and that people should be aware of it and its potentials and its necessary relationship to humanity as kind of an Ajna center for Sanat Kumara is very important. I mean, if we can be aware of the potentials offered to us, the possibilities offered to us, it's very enlivening and motivating and energizing. And we do have to keep our energy because the road ahead is demanding and full of burdens. So what's ahead for the group? What's ahead for this group? First of all, a preliminary period of emergence into public consciousness and thus of making its presence felt. Well, first of all, I guess people have to know about it in some form. People have to be made aware of this group. And this will be done through the steady communication of the new ideals and the constant emphasis laid upon the essential oneness of all humanity. Okay, ideals, what can we say here? Well, I'll just repeat. Ideals, communicated, and oneness of humanity emphasized. Now that's hierarchy. No hurried work, it says. Humanity emphasized. It will be the result of the uniformity and inclusiveness of the notes sounded by one here and another there. We sound the same inclusive notes. We sound the same inclusive notes. And it will be recognized. R, E, C, Z, D. During this stage, there must be no hurried work and no precipitate action of any kind. We have to lay the foundations carefully. You know, the wise use of slow action, the second ray is involved here. Oop, that's an interesting term, emphasized. Okay, no hurried work. The growth of the group and of its ideas will be slow and sure, and this sounds somewhat Taurian, except that Taurus, on occasion, charges ahead, especially when combined with the first ray, but this is largely a second inclusive second ray group. The group exists already. Okay. Let's just say this was written in 28, 29, 30, somewhere in there. It has not to be formed and organized, and there is therefore, for none of you, the assuming of any sense of responsibility for the organizing of any activity desired to lure these disciples who have chosen thus to work subjectively into publicity. He knows the busybody nature of the disciple and how some officious disciple will decide, okay, I'm going to organize the new group of world servers. Such are not the methods approved by the elder brothers of the race, nor is it the way they work themselves. Something far more interior and organic is at work and not outer organizational methods. Methods, yes. Know each of you for yourselves whether you stand for the new position, the new attitude towards work, and for the subjective method. We've got to confirm this. These are kind of like orders in a way. These are imperatives. Know this, you know. We have to work in the new way, and we will be gathered together. Know each of you yourselves whether you stand for the new position, the new attitude towards work, and for the subjective magnetic method of gathering, not of outwardly assembling. Okay. Like I invite you to become a member of the new group of world service. It wouldn't work. Decide once and for all whether you prefer to work in the old exoteric ambitious manner, building and vitalizing an organization, and so producing all the mechanisms which go with such a method of work, and also many difficulties which have not worked in an especially spiritual manner. I wonder if my chronometer is here telling me I'm done. Oopsie. Let's see. Looks like it. Sorry about that. Looks like I may be in trouble. And not again, not know how long all of this may be working. Yeah, I'm doomed to start at the beginning. Well, I have some idea. So he's presenting us with a choice. The old methods or the new subjective methods that interiorly, when the would-be servers have achieved certain requirements, they will be gathered together and they will find themselves motivated in the ways that the members of the new group of world servers are motivated. They will find themselves in a way automatically affiliated with this inner group, which has many outer methods, but a similar purpose and objective, and a very positive motivation for the uplift of humanity and I'll just say, and of the planet these days, as the planet is in so much jeopardy due to many things, including human errors. Remember that such groups, the outer groups, are still greatly needed and are useful. It is not yet the new age, no, it's still that time, still a Piscean play out. There's much of the age of Pisces to go at that time, and even now we have 3/4 of a century, roughly, of Piscean energy still to deal with in overlap with the Aquarian age. And the little ones must not be left exposed to the new forces, nor turned out bereft of the nursery to which they naturally belong. So is not that the old methods are wrong. They are still needed for some, but how do you choose to work? Because there are so many that are working with the old methods. Even now, I remember that I did some work in the old way long ago when the university was first founded. And it was not as organic as it could have been. I used outer methods to choose. It's sort of third-ray selective methods to choose certain people for certain positions to do certain things. But it was better, I learned, to let natural abilities emerge because so often choosing as I did, it didn't hold together as it should. I was fortunate that it did hold together, of course, but there could have been more subtle methods. And so I'm personally very aware of how, of this distinction and this choice that he is offering. Should the new mode of work appeal to you? See to it that the personality is subordinated, that the life of meditation is kept paramount in importance, that sensitivity to the subjective realm is cultivated, and any necessary outer activities are handled from within outwards. So, this is the, if you, basically, he's saying, look here. He's saying, if you want to work in a new way, do this. These requirements are familiar to us. We can't run around emphasizing our personality. And meditation is paramount, and sensitivity must be ever-growing, and don't fall into the maya of doing things with the wrong motivation, just doing them, you know, just have the inner impulse which leads to the correct outer activity. You know, so many of us may fly into action without really thinking through or being connected with the motivating spiritual impulse, which keeps our hands and feet moving. Also, maybe on the other side, avoid a purely mystical introspection or its opposite, extreme and overemphasized organizing spirit. You know, the 2-4-6 line in one way and the 1-3-5-7 line in the other. Remembering that a life of truly occult meditation must inevitably produce outer happenings, but that these objective results are produced by an inner growth and not by an outer activity. And ancient scripture teaches the truth in the following way. So avoid extremes if we really want to work in the new way. And we, you know, we are the judges whether we have avoided extremes, whether we've been too introspective about it all, and not present, not showing up, as it were, outwardly, or that we have been, you know, a busybody, really. So there are different methods of work, and they have to be kept balanced and not allowed to go to extremes. Now, what is this from the old commentary teaching us how to balance these two approaches? When the sun progresses into the mansion of the serving man, is at the 11th house, the way of life takes the place of the way of work. Being takes the place of doing, shall we say. Being takes the place of doing. And is this the 11th house or the sign Aquarius, something of that nature? Then the tree of life grows until its branches shelter all the sons of men. You know, it's the seed has been planted and the developments have worked from life into the outer world. The building of the temple and the carrying of the stones cease. In other words, let's say these are more outer activities, but in a way, we are subjectively building Solomon's temple, or the temple of solar man, subjectively. The growing trees are seen, the buildings disappear, you know, the work of man, the busy work of man, but the nourishing branches of life are these, i.e. the nourishing branches, i.e. I think maybe I have to stay off my mouse pad here. The nourishing branches of life. The buildings disappear. Kind of interesting what's happened in South America. There's just so many buried cities. The buildings have disappeared in the jungle of growth, and now they're being brought to light. The buildings disappeared. Let the sun pass into its appointed place, and in this day and generation attend ye to the roots of growth. And basically, we're being told, work more subjectively. That's what we're being told. Well, you know, being and doing. And we may feel inclined to fly into action, you know, because we're told by Moria, by human hands and human feet, but the motivating alignment has to be correct, and the whole subjective attitude has to be spiritual, and the mind has to be in touch with the directing soul, and all of this impressed upon the brain before it makes a lot of sense to run around and do things. You know, and people with third-rate physical bodies like I have, and maybe, you know, some of you know what it's like to leap into action and then maybe wonder what you're doing. So before the planet is created, the planetary logos meditates deeply and envisions everything. And before the solar system is created, the same can be said of the solar logos found in deep meditation, visualizing the archetype. And that saves a lot of time to, a lot of error is circumvented when you can really center yourself and see the end from the beginning. Controlling impulses, controlling Mars in that way is an important step on the way to effective work. Okay, so the trees of life and the buildings built by man. The avoidance of extremes, not too far away, not too in the subtle worlds, not too external. Master Moria says every leader has to learn not to be too far away or you're forgotten, and not to be too close, otherwise you're taken for granted. Always that middle position, all treading the noble middle path. There are so many ways to do it, you know. Little groups will spring up here and there, whose members respond to the new note and whose growth into the world group will be watched over by one or more working disciples. I suppose by the time you're a working disciple, it's another step along the way from simply being an accepting disciple. One who knows or accepts the occult presentation and believes in it and then wants to work with it. I think that, you know, one of the last words offered by the Tibetan to his groups was, work, my brothers, work, my brothers. But these latter, these working disciples, a little more interior, do not organize the groups. They grow. As a man in his place and another, in this place and another, in that place, awakens to the new vision or comes into incarnation in order to take his place in the work of bringing in the new era. So, let's just say the natural growth of these groups involves a different dynamic than the outer organization of these groups. I guess, you know, when you're dealing with a school, you have to have some degree of organization in an outward sense, but the subjective interplay is the most important. These groups, you know, stimulated by that 16th century impulse and developed accordingly, and now groups within the context of the one great serving group, they are that now. These groups will demonstrate no sense of separateness. They will be unaware of personal or of group ambition. They will recognize their unity with all that exists and will stand before the world as examples of pure living, constructive building, creative activity, subordinated to the general purpose beauty and inclusiveness. So here we have, we have a very beautiful description of what the new groups should be like. And I think, you know, we have to, so let's just say, this has been a beautiful description of the quality and functioning of the new groups. So it's not a question of getting out there and organizing the groups. Rather, they begin to emerge, and they will demonstrate no sense of separateness. That's so important, you know, overcoming that great heresy and learning how to support one another, even though ways and means may be different. They will be unaware of personal or group ambition. They don't consider that, and those who are motivated or animated in that way will not remain in these groups. They will recognize their unity with all that exists and will stand before the world as examples of. So you always set that example. Maybe the hardest thing of all, pure living, constructive building. So, you know, we have Virgo in the sixth ray, and we have the second ray and seventh ray. Creative activity, third ray and fourth ray, you know, creative activity, subordinated, all that subordinated to the general purpose, beauty, and inclusiveness. Perhaps in the early stages of integration, the words friendliness and cooperativeness best describe them. It's so simple, so direct, and so true. So we have to take the simple things which help us understand what the emerging groups will do. Perhaps in the early stages of integration, the word friendliness and cooperativeness best describe the way they function, the way the personnel functions. They are not interested in dogmas. Oops. Or doctrines, and have no shibboleths. You know, that's a term borrowed from masonry. You know, it's like a password or something. You say it wrong, they kill you. I'm not the modern masons, you know, taken from episodes in history. And if you say it right, you pass. They are not interested in dogmas or doctrines and have no shibboleths. Their outstanding characteristic will lie in individual and group freedom from a critical spirit. Well, you know, criticism, one of the major causes of glamour, suspicion, self-pity, and criticism. But criticism is probably the third ray part of that, and self-pity the second ray, and suspicion, the first ray, you know, paranoia and so forth. This non-criticism will not grow out of an inability to see error, because, you know, these people in the new groups are awakening and awakened. They can see. They have some psychological insight. So it's not growing out of the inability to see error or failure to measure up to an idea. Falsity, impurity, and weakness will be recognized for what they are, but when noted, will only serve to evoke a loving helpfulness. Well, a high standard is here articulated, and we can well ask ourselves, you know, have I carried this forth? I can see I've failed many times in my life here. You know, when you have the strong third ray, the critical spirit can be with you. And the mentally focused disciple these days, working in the concrete mind, can be critical, very. So, this non-criticism will not grow out of inability to see the fault or out of failure to measure up to an idea, like we wouldn't understand what's wrong. All these things are seen for what they are, but still, loving helpfulness is invoked. A going forth to help that which is wanting. Little by little, these groups will come to know each other, you know, covering the earth with verdure, as it has been said. These groups are the growing verdure, sources of life and of mutual nourishment to each other. Little by little, these groups will come to know each other and to meet with one another at set times and places. They will come, you know, it's almost like everybody comes together for the hierarchical conclave. The different ashrams are prototypes of these groups, and they come together at the right time. They will come to these mutual conferences with no desire to impress one another, with no thought of relative numerical strength. They will demonstrate no ambition to increase their ranks, you know, judging outwardly by numbers, judging quality by number. It's something to avoid. How should they, when they know themselves all to be members of the One World Group? They have no teaching to give or a doctrinal nature, you know, believe this or be cast aside. And will not seek to demonstrate learning, you know, the pride, mental pride goes along with this. They will meet solely to discuss modes of world helpfulness. The formation of a platform so universal and composed of such basic truths that it can be presented under all the varying methods and utilize the many terminologies. They will endeavor to employ each other's terms, you know, to make that link and show that there is a harmony and commonality, and to familiarize themselves with each other's approach to reality and symbology. So here we have, you know, a true, let's just call it, you know, a true unification in process. And ego, lower ego, is left out of their meetings, conferences. They don't come to impress. They don't come to be singled out as the best. That's a low stage, and would that some political leaders would understand that it's humanity first, and even then, it's the planet and the plan first. It's no country first, it's no person first. And when there is a meritocracy, I mean, maybe Sanat Kumara stands forth as the first, but he's not the first when he looks above. Who is the first? What is the first? The one being only, which we all are. So, you know, all of this requires the jettisoning of old and limiting methods. The requirements seem high and at variance with the condition of many people's psyches presently. And even then it was brought forward. There's still competition, and they're still trying to best each other and be first and greatest and dominant. You know, the lower Leo tendencies still rule so many. There's no attempt for the part to stand out. No attempt for the part to stand out. above and beyond the other parts. All come in helpfulness and friendliness and cooperativeness. Well, sometimes it happens, and when it does, it's the sign of things to come, and a very beautiful possibility is realized practically. Little by little, also, the special contribution and note of each group will be recognized. Now, this is only just, and where a need exists for just that special approach and the particular note or method of interpretation in any part of the world, there will be an immediate and united impulse to facilitate the work of that special group that that special group could do in that place. So, you know, what do we have here? You know, we have intelligent and loving selectivity. In other words, if you do something the best, then you are called upon to do that. And there's no jealousy involved in that selection. There's only support. So let's just say no jealousy, only support. Well, beautiful ideals are here enunciated. Those of us who've been working in the field for a while, we know that many of us have a bit of a stretch to measure up to these selfless, friendly, cooperative, loving approaches. But we will. We will. And the oneness of humanity will emerge, maybe in imitation of the demonstrated oneness of such serving groups as the New Group of World Servers and their many offshoots. An example will be set, and people say, well, it works for you. It really looks beautiful. Let's try it, you know. These groups, with the one subjective group of conscious living souls behind them, will be too busy with world service and interest to waste time on trifling non-essentials. Well, to know the essential from the non-essential, this is very important in the realm of effective service. We just don't want to waste time, do we? We do not. They will not have the time to play around with group names and insignia and badges and the technicalities of fraternities when they meet together. Those are outer things, you know, they tend to emphasize an outer identity. World needs, world opportunities, and the rapid development of the consciousness of mankind and the initiation of humanity into spiritual realities will so engross their attention that they will have no interest in purely physical plane arrangements nor in laying the emphasis upon their own personal growth. They really are setting the world of the spirit first. And the outer things, which have meant a lot in the past, for the sake of group identification, no longer are deemed important and worth spending time upon. They will be well aware that response to world need and service and life of focused meditation will promote their growth, service and meditation. And of course, the study too, really. Will promote their growth. Okay, let's just make sure that I have not. Yeah, I did. So, service and meditation will promote their eyes are not upon themselves, upon their own good characters, or upon their individual accomplishments. You know, all of that, all of the secondary things are of the path of probation, and we're talking about real discipleship, or even talking about real group discipleship, in fact. So all of this is prognostication of what lies ahead, and we can follow it as we attempt to acquiesce in the method for working with the new group of world servers and helping it in subjective ways to fulfill its important responsibilities in the future. Later, as a result of their telepathic relationship and their united conferences, there may emerge certain esoteric groups and schools for development in order more rapidly to equip them for world service. Well, you know, someone like myself, I'm counting on that. And as we've read in Letters on Occult Meditation, the coming of these schools, though not immediate, seems very much a certainty. Later, the esoteric schools may emerge, and already, if you read in Letters on Occult Meditation, even then, back almost 100 years ago, there were the initial developments, and they have proceeded, you know, I suppose in such places as California and Australia. And there seem to be, you know, stirrings along these lines in Sweden and Russia. And the emergence is coming, but it can't be rushed. And their real power will begin to evidence itself, but even in, still in a small way, when the great Lord again is outwardly visible, the reappearance of the Christ. So he's mentioning the new schools here and in Letters on Occult Meditation and also in the Rays and Initiations. He does say, you know, they are still far ahead. Many other things have to proceed. We have to get that sense of order of what must come first. Later, as a result of their telepathic relationship and their united conferences. Well, sometimes I think, you know, I don't know if we have this yet, but I know that many, let's say we have our SRI-USR conferences, many who work in different ways and present different approaches are welcomed. And as one of my friends said once, well, everybody gets a chance, you know. It's just the beginning. In these schools, modes of meditation, the intensification of vibration and the laws of the universe will be taught, and the right use of color and sound. But all will be subordinated to the idea of service and the uplift of humanity. Also, the schools referred to in Letters on Occult Meditation will gradually come into being. So is there a distinction here, or are we referring to the schools as mentioned in Letters on Occult Meditation? Now, later, in a later book, he says, well, you know, the schools mentioned in Letters on Occult Meditation are lie far in the future. I mean, you know, did the development of atomic energy and the exploding of the atomic bomb and the putting into the hands of humanity of the method of destroying itself, I mean, did these things make a difference? Was the schedule altered? I think when Master DK returns to writing, that some of this will be spelled out for us. But, you know, in the Moria Federation, given that Master Moria is the head of all esoteric schools and organizations, so we tap in on his role in that respect. We try to offer at least some of the impending curriculum, which will be offered in a still more intense form in the true new schools. We try to offer that synthetic approach. Nothing can be forced. People have to come together and build together and achieve a certain point of tension together in order to take the next step. But the esoteric schools will be a mode of presenting candidates to the initiators, and some can enter the preparatory schools, which involve themselves more with the first and second initiation, and you would think that the advanced schools will deal maybe with the third initiation. I don't think the fourth initiation can really be approached in school form. And Masonry will do its work, and the new church will do its work, and three modes, three organisms will present their candidates for initiation, working along the first, second, and third ray line, Masonry, the church, and the banded esoteric organisms or occult organisms. But of what use, he says, now a little sobriety for us, okay? But of what use is it for me to forecast the future in more explicit terms and hold out a picture of an intriguing quality when, at present, the integration of the group of world mystics and its close welding is not yet, we would say, an accomplished fact. We have a lot of preliminary work to do. And as much time as it takes to do it, well, that's the time we spend. The Christ does not reappear at a certain moment, which is governed by conventional time. A certain state or condition of energy relationship has to be achieved, and that will be the right time, that measure of peace, that measure of sharing and the cleaning house in the church and political organizations. That will indicate the time. So we have so much work to do. World unity, brotherhood in its true sense, not any kind of exclusive brotherhood. Think of the way the Ku Klux Klan looks at brotherhood. It's a distortion. The growth of telepathic interplay, the elimination of non-essentials, which serve to separate the thoughts of men and bring about separateness on the physical plane, and the laying of a true emphasis upon the fundamentals of the Ages wisdom, the manifestation of a true understanding, one requirement after another, the bringing about of at one-ment with the soul, the recognition of those who belong to the work of world saviors or servers first. This is the immediate work to be done, and this must engross your attention. So what we have here is really a grand summation of what he's been dealing with in terms of requirements all along. So let's just call this, am I there? Here we go. So this is a grand summation of what must be done and what needs must be fulfilled before. No. Before more intriguing possibilities can be seriously considered. I'll read it again, because it's so good, it's so demanding and so focused on what it is we really have to do. World unity, brotherhood in its true sense, based upon the soul and the monad, the growth of telepathic interplay, you know, the welding together of the servers, the elimination of non-essentials which serve to separate the thoughts of men and bring about separateness on the physical plane. If we overemphasize the secondary things, we forget about that which really unites us, unifies us, and the laying of a true emphasis upon the fundamentals of the ageless wisdom. That's what humanity can absorb at this time. The manifestation of a true understanding, unbeset by glamour and illusion. The bringing about of at-one-ment with the soul. The recognition of those who belong to the group of world saviors. Notice that he uses that word now. The group of world servers does turn into, eventually, the group of world saviors. This is the immediate work to be done, and this must engross your attention, and, you know, we would say that ever the practical approach, and not the lofty and fanciful. As Master Moria has said, and about which I've often felt chastened, we are tired of castles in the air. They want action, rightly motivated and needful in relation to the divine plan. So this, and this alone, warrants the expenditure of all that any of you have to give, love and life, time and money. Well, the demand, yeah, let's just say, you know, the the demand is clear, and the foundation must be built. So every one of us can pause on every one of these requirements. Do we think in terms of world unity and brotherhood? And are we really recognizing our fellow members of the new group? And, you know, are we supportive and en rapport with many different efforts that are going on, maybe in different ways than our own, but are moving toward the right fulfillment of the divine plan within our own sphere, and just getting rid of all those little things that divide us. This has been the age of Pisces, Virgo, and a lot of little material things have divided us. It's been somewhat an age of sectarianism, through the tendency of that concrete mind cultivated by Virgo to divide. And of course, the fifth ray is becoming stronger all the time with its initial emphasis upon the law of cleavages. So we've really been given a picture of what should involve our attention in the last number of paragraphs, and, you know, in the previous program. This and this alone, it's an exhortation here, you know, he's wonderful at that. This and this alone justifies your existence and calls forth from all of you who respond to the vision that utter sacrifice, which is so rare and so far-reaching in its effects. I mean, the masters have given their all, you know, so they know what they're talking about. And maybe, you know, we don't yet, because it's so rare, utter sacrifice. When you talk about utter sacrifice, you know, I think, well, for us, the Christ as the great example, the casting of all that one has at the feet of the Lord of life, whether Sanakumara or the Christ, in order that the work of world salvage may go forward, the elimination out of one's life of all that can possibly hinder, the giving of all that one has until it hurts to give. Okay. The ruling of one's life on the basis of surrender, acquiescence, you know, let's just put it this way, acquiescence, as in the Garden of Gethsemane, asking oneself all the time, what can I relinquish in order that I may help more adequately? That and more than that lies ahead of you, of all of you who hear the call and respond to the need and the opportunity. Well, he builds up his case and comes to these final exhortations, which summons from us everything we've got. And, you know, we have to count the cost. We have to count the cost, he tells us. Anyone who would truly serve the masters and then become a master of the wisdom must count the cost. I'm making it really big, you know, I don't dare put it in 72 or something like that, but here's a grand summation of what really is essential to help very effectively with the elevation of humanity and its alignment with the divine plan. You know, I just feel riveted on this section. This and this alone justifies your existence. That's why you came into incarnation. And calls forth, he's speaking to us as potential members of his ashram and certainly as interested students, calls forth from all of you who respond to the vision that utter sacrifice, which is so rare and so far-reaching in its effects. This is really worth pondering, isn't it? How close do any of us come to utter sacrifice? The casting of all that one has at the feet of the Lord of life, you know, a sealed vase wherein he carries all his aspiration to cast before the one who is to greet him at the gate. A sealed vase, but then the casting of all that one has at the feet of the Lord of life, in order that the work of world salvage may go forward, the elimination out of one's life of all that can possibly hinder, so many things, the giving of all that one has until it hurts to give. The story of the widow's mite, you know, there's Jesus in the temple, or Christ in the temple with his disciples, and in comes the poor widow and gives all she has, and the Christ knew it. Well, she is elevated through that giving, of course, and the ruling of one's life on the basis of surrender, of acquiescence, as in the Garden of Gethsemane, asking oneself all the time, what can I relinquish in order that I may help more adequately? That and more than that lies ahead of all of you who hear the call and respond to the need and opportunity. Well, this is really demanding. And I wonder how many of us disciples would shrink back at the kind of demand just articulated by Master TK. Well, this is, I don't know, my chronometer went kerflooey, you know, so I think this is about 2 hours, and I'll have to see whether there's time for anything more. This is really hitting home, isn't it? And we're called out of our usual preoccupations to think about these questions. Asking oneself all the time, what can I relinquish in order that I may help more adequately? I just know there's just so many otherwise valuable disciples, and I don't exclude myself, who just don't ask themselves that all the time. But that's the way of the Master, and that's the way of those approaching the Christ through the hierarchy. That's the way. Yes, friends, that what we've been going over is so impressive. I'm just going to leave it at that. And we'll carry on shortly. We have a whole astrology section coming up, and the wrapping up by page 445 of this Rule 10, with a lot of programs in it. We're going to be beginning number 50 before long. We finished up 33 or number 49. I'm not sure when this can take place again, but we're working from page 428 onward, and this is the 34th program for Rule 10, and also the beginning of the 50th program for the Rules for Magic on the Astral Plane. So thank you for reading and thinking with me. And I would say, with regard to some of these last statements, the Tibetan exhortation, thank you for feeling with me. It's hard not to respond sentiently, you know, to aspirationally to this evocation. And if we're brave enough, we'll put ourselves to the test, and we will ask these kinds of questions, knowing that as hard as they seem, even more lies ahead of us, even more. Okay. I'm not sure how long this program is, okay, but having lost my chronometer along the way, but let's see. We shall go on. There's still, I don't know, some, still over 100 pages left in this section on the rules for magic on the astral plane, possibly. A lot to do. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.